Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram, the weekend edition, Saturday, February 6th, 2021. Transportation. Motran. Population, production, give region leverage. By Stuart Doreen. S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. The Midland-Odessa Transportation Alliance, also known as MOTRAN, says there are two reasons the region is deserving of funding, population and production. Both are reasons that more vehicles are on the roads in this region compared to other regions around Lubbock, San Angelo, and Abilene. Even an oil downturn and COVID pandemic haven't done much to impact the pitch. For instance, the change in population from 2010 to 2020 in the Texas Department of Transportation's Odessa District is 24%. The growth is compared to 8.6% in Lubbock, 5.1% in San Angelo, and minus 1.0% in Abilene. During the same time span, the population inside Midland and Ector counties increased by a combined 74,000 people. Lubbock County's population increased by 31,000, and Tom Green County, where San Angelo resides, increased by 7,500. In fact, statistics show the combined estimated population inside Midland and Ector counties surpassed Lubbock County by nearly 40,000 people. MOTRAN Executive Director James Beauchamp believes a younger population, especially inside Midland and Odessa, will keep that population increasing in the region at a higher rate than the other larger metropolitan areas in the region. When it comes to production, there is no rival in the region or state than what is currently taking place inside the Odessa District, which includes Midland, Martin, Reeves, Loving, and Upton counties. In fact, 7 of the top 10 producing counties in the region are in the Odessa District, including the 4 counties that produced more than 100 million barrels each. Beauchamp also noted that oil production doesn't tell the entire story, as a natural gas production is spiking in the region. Reeves County is undeniable leader with over 1 billion CF produced in 2019, according to statistics provided by MOTRAN. Midland and Loving counties were second and third in the Permian with 439 and 423 million, respectively, and the amount of natural gas produced rising across the region. We will be talking about the huge economic generator that is gas production, Beauchamp said. What Beauchamp and other regional leaders hope is that the statistics translate into transportation dollars for regional projects. Inside Midland and Odessa, priorities include projects along Loop 250 in Midland, Loop 338 in Odessa, the modernizing of I-20, the Yukon Corridor, and development of the Craddock Highway, an outer loop for the two cities east of State Highway 49 and west of Farm to Market 1788 toward Loop 338 in Odessa. MOTRAN also points to regional priorities like State Highway 349 south of Midland and the expansion of U.S. 385, which will provide a stronger connection between Odessa and Interstate 10. Today, we're looking at a new project 5 to 7 years out because of the backlog of letting, Beauchamp said. It literally means we are stacking up projects for the future. Funding has increased in recent years. Beauchamp talked about the letting of $1.8 million in projects when he came to Midland, Odessa. That increased to an overpass a year, 8 to 10 years ago. He said that amount is now $600 million a year. You can't let more or you will drive up prices, he said. Note, population statistics came from the U.S. Census Bureau estimates. Production statistics came from the Railroad Commission of Texas reports. UT report. Midland COVID hospitalizations to continue declining. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. A report from the University of Texas at Austin projects that coronavirus hospitalizations in the Midland-Odessa region will continue declining significantly. By March, hospitalizations are predicted to fall to the lowest numbers since last spring. The report analyzed the 22 trauma service areas in Texas and used hospitalization data and cell phone mobility data to estimate the local state of the pandemic in each TSA and to make short-term projections of COVID-19 hospitalizations and ICU needs. Hospitalizations in the Midland-Odessa TSA have been declining since mid-January, according to the report. There were 218 patients hospitalized on January 16th, 117 on February 3rd. If the current trend continues, the report projects that number will be down to 41 on March 2nd. There have also been 44% fewer infections reported in the last 14 days compared to the previous 2 weeks. The report states that the reproduction number in the Midland-Odessa region has fallen to 0.7, the lowest it's been throughout the pandemic. A value higher than 1 indicates the pandemic is growing, while a value below 1 indicates it is subsiding. With the current reproduction number, there's only a 10% chance the pandemic is growing. Midland Memorial Hospital reported 30 active night COVID cases earlier this week, a sharp decline from more than 100 in November. CEO and President Russell Myers has previously attributed that drop to the increasing availability of a vaccine and the success of MMH's Antibody Infusion Center in treating vulnerable populations. Only a handful of the several hundred patients who have received the antibody treatment, which is available for those 65 and older or otherwise high risk who have tested positive, have gone on to require hospitalization. The positivity rate in Midland is down to the lowest level in more than 4 months. About 12% of people tested by MMH this week were COVID positive, the lowest rate since the week of September 26th. The drop in COVID-19 hospitalizations in the Midland Odessa region follows a statewide trend. Hospitalizations in Texas are down from about 14,000 in mid-January to 10,500 on Thursday. Ramsey era in Midland begins. MISD Board approves superintendent's contract by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HearstMP.com. Angelica Ramsey made her first public appearance in Midland to become the school district's 12th superintendent. After the Midland ISD School Board voted unanimously to approve her contract and officially hire Ramsey, who previously was the lone finalist for the position, the superintendent of the Pleasant Valley School District in Camarillo, California, signed on the dotted line. Her first day will be February 22nd. The 3-year contract provides a base salary of $275,000, the same amount the district was paying her predecessor. The contract also calls for a district cell phone, a $600 a month car allowance, and up to $7,000 for moving expenses. Everything is standard, according to the board president, Brian Murray, but Ramsey's arrival isn't seen as just another hire. Rick Davis, who has been on the board for 2 previous superintendent hires, said Friday that hiring Ramsey does feel different, that she has the right balance of qualities to get the job done. "I have more confidence in this one being successful than I had in any of the others," Davis said. "I was optimistic and felt good about the others and was excited about the others, but this one does feel different. I think she really is exactly the right fit for us at exactly the right time." While Ramsey said she will wait and see before talking in much detail about what to expect, she told the Reporter-Telegram she has created a 90 to 100-day plan of entry that she would bring before the board. Should the board approve it, she will publish it for people in the community to read so residents, parents, staff, and students know what the next step is. "That is step one," Ramsey said, "getting to know the context of MISD. Murray said Ramsey brings a whole new level to the academics. He said her plan includes getting Midland ISD to a phonics-based reading program. It will not be an autonomous thing around the district. It will be everybody doing the same thing, and we are going to build around that base. I am super excited about laying the foundations that I thought would have already been in place. She brings a strong academic background, and I'm really looking forward to making some changes there because that's always been our main focus. Davis took the time during the meeting to read comments from Scott Wright, the president of the Pleasant Valley Education Association, about Ramsey. Wright wrote that Ramsey inherited a difficult situation in Camarillo that included staffing problems at the district office and all-time low morale. She committed herself to improving both issues, and she did so quickly and efficiently. She understands how vital each employee is in ensuring the education of students, and she was able to motivate all of us to work collaboratively for their benefit. Davis added, "Even more impressive to me was the recommendations, referrals, and the testimonials that people who worked with her gave about her and about the very qualities we were looking for, that they confirmed what we thought we were seeing and hearing from her personally. They confirmed that she actually walked the walk and not just talked the talk." Board members gave credit during the meeting to Interim Superintendent Ann Dixon for her work with the district and her help during the superintendent search. It was stated that Dixon will stay with the district through the next board meeting, February the 16th. That meeting could include a decision about the 21-22 calendar year. But for one Friday, the Bowie Fine Arts Academy auditorium was filled with an optimism about educational improvement in Midland. Murray, who just became board president in January, said it was an exciting day for education. "We're going to start fresh and we're going to right the ship," Murray said. "It's time for us to make some moves. And so there's some changes coming, and that won't be easy, but we have to do what's best for the kids." Oil prices climb back to pre-COVID levels. Price rises $4.65 this week, approaches $57 closing price. By Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Crude prices have climbed to their highest levels since February 2020, just before the start of the novel coronavirus COVID-19 and resulting oil market crash. West Texas Intermediate on the New York Mercantile Exchange briefly passed $57 a barrel in Friday trading before closing at $56.85 a barrel, a gain of 62 cents. The contract rose all week, starting with a $1.35 rise on Monday to $53.55, followed by a $1.21 increase Tuesday, 93 cents on Wednesday, and 54 cents on Thursday. The posted price ended the week at $53.33, according to Plains All American. Natural gas on the NYMEX started the week with a near 29-cent jump as frigid weather hit the northeast and added 15 cents Thursday before losing 7 Friday to close at 2.863 per MCF, up from 2.850 on Monday. The recovery in oil prices is premised on recovery in global demand, which is premised on a successful rollout of the vaccines across the globe. Steve Pruitt, President and Chief Executive Officer of Elevation Resources, told the Reporter Telegram, "Current oil prices are underpinned by OPEC Plus discipline on cuts in supply, which Saudi Arabia underwrote with an additional 1 million barrels of oil equivalent cut through March. It will be critical for global oil demand to show continued improvement by April to offset the extra barrels coming on the market from Saudi Arabia and likely from Iraq, Libya, and Nigeria." Pruitt reported his company obtained additional capital at the beginning of the year, and we are back to drilling with one rig for the foreseeable future. "It's exciting to see our drilling and soon our completion teams back to work in Andrews County drilling Barnett oil wells." The capital was well-timed to coincide with the dramatic recovery in oil prices. Differentials in Cushing and the New York MEX roll are also supportive, with the narrowest differential to Cushing WTI we've ever seen after transportation charges. Midland barrels are trading at a premium to Cushing barrels due to the abundance of oil pipeline capacity to the Gulf Coast. Rene Santos, manager of North American Supply and Production Analytics at S&P Global Platts, told the Reporter-Telegram by email that U.S. shale production is expected to return to growth in the second half of the year as activity increases. The higher crude prices are driving activity, but unlikely to have a large effect on 2021 production, as most operators are expected to maintain capital discipline. Still, the risk of unconstrained growth remains. Santos continued that the higher prices will result in favorable well economics and free cash flow this year, allowing some operators to self-fund drilling programs and/or pay down debt. He added that the recent 60-day moratorium on federal well permitting and ban on new leasing by the Biden administration is not expected to have a short-term impact. Vito Torito, lead quantitative risk analyst at S&P Global Platts, told the Reporter-Telegram that Brent futures, the international benchmark, are likely to remain supported in the very short term. But if new buying momentum is not able to push prices above $60 a barrel threshold, then volatility would likely move back up and a period of consolidation would occur. According to Bloomberg, the recent rally is being backed by a surge of interest in commodities. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries and its allies have pledged to keep draining a virus-driven surplus, and there are expectations that the global economy will recover this year, raising forecasts for stronger oil demand. Investor holdings of West Texas Intermediate futures have soared to the highest since 2018. Rig count approaches 200 in the Permian Basin, by Mella McEwen, MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Strengthening commodity prices are fueling a continued rise in the nation's rig count as it rebounds from last year's pandemic-related oil market crash. In their weekly rig count, oil field services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics firm Enverus reported an 8-rig rise in the U.S. rig count for 392 rigs at work nationwide. There were 299 rigs drilling for oil, up 4, but 377 below the 676 seeking crude last February. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 4, but is 19 below the 111 tallied last year. Texas added 7 rigs for 189. New Mexico lost 1 rig for 61 at work for the week. Ohio was the only other state besides Texas to gain, adding 2 rigs to even, while New Mexico was the only producing state to post a decline. The Permian Basin added 6 rigs for 198. Lee County, New Mexico, was the most active county in the Permian with 32 rigs. Eddy County followed with 29 rigs. Martin County jumped 3. Loving County had 18. Howard County added 1 for 17 rigs. Midland County and Reeves County each reported 16 rigs this week, down 2. Orion County saw its first drilling activity of the year with 1. Enverus Rig Analytics reported the U.S. rig count is up 12% in the last month, but still down 47% year over year. In the Permian, Chevron has accelerated to a 6-year, 6-rig program after averaging 5 in January. NGP Partners backed Tap Rock Operating ramped up to 5 rigs at the beginning of February after averaging 4 rigs for the last 3 weeks. Tap Rock has never had this many rigs running, all of which are on federal land in Lee County. Apache dusted off a Permian drilling program that had been dormant for 8 months by mobilizing a rig in Upton County. And after a 9-month drilling freeze, Battalion Oil is running a rig in Ward County. In the Williston, Continental Resources has increased to 3 after averaging 2 since May. Whiting Petroleum is now running 1 rig after a 9-month drilling vacation.
Hello, this is Michael, reading another article from the Midland Reporter Telegram, published Saturday, February 6th, 2021. Midland Unified Command Team opens second mass vaccination site, from staff reports. The Midland Unified Command Team will open a second mass vaccination site at Golf Course Road Church of Christ Family Center, 3500 West Golf Course Road, on February 15th. Administration for Phases 1A and 1B individuals by appointment only will continue. The Midland County Horseshoe Backstage location, 2514 Arena Trail, also will remain open for second dose administration. If a person received his or her first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine at the Horseshoe Backstage location, he or she will return to that same location for a second dose at that person's scheduled appointment time. Those people who qualify as Phases 1A, healthcare workers, or 1B, over 65 and or diagnosed with a chronic disease, can register to get on this list for this distribution and future allocations of the COVID-19 vaccine by visiting midlandhealth.org/vaccine and clicking on the Click to Register button. Detailed information defining the populations included in these phases is available on the above-mentioned website. If a person has had COVID-19 and wants the vaccine, the CDC recommends he or she be fully recovered and 14 days past the quarantine period. Currently, the state of Texas has put an increased emphasis on vaccinating those 75 and over. If a person falls in this age category, it is highly encouraged that a person to get registered for the vaccine. Once on the waiting list, a person will be assigned an appointment time and date and receive an email, text message, and or phone call with the information needed. This communication will come from support@healthipass.com, phone number 855-897-1447 for text messages, or 221-1111 for phone calls. After a person has a confirmed date and time for a vaccine, he or she must make sure they complete all the forms online that are sent prior to arriving for the vaccine. People should take a valid picture ID with them to appointments, arrive on time, and wear a short sleeve or sleeveless shirt. If a jacket is needed, make sure it is easy to remove. When arriving to Golf Course Road Church of Christ, enter the parking lot from Tarleton Street and follow signage and volunteers to the west side parking lot. A map of the location is available at midlandhealth.org/vaccine. If unable to drive, Easy Rider will be using Midland Route Number 2 to drop off at that vaccine location. Bus routes are available at www.ez-rider.org/routes.html. For further questions, visit midlandhealth.org/vaccine. Vaccine volunteers. Volunteers are needed for the COVID-19 mass vaccination site. Those interested should email vaxvaxvolunteers@midlandhealth.org or call 432-312-0030. Please include your name, phone number, clinical, including credentials, or non-clinical, and day and time you are available over the next 6 weeks between the hours of 8:45 a.m. and 5 p.m.
Obituaries and death notices. Edward Cackle died on Sunday, January 24th, from complications from COVID-19. Visitation will be held at Ellis Funeral Home on Tuesday, February 9th from 5 to 7 p.m. with a rosary at 6 p.m. Graveside burial will be held at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Wednesday, February 10th at 3 p.m. Kelly Brigham DeLauder, passed away on January 29th. The family will be celebrating her life privately. Nancy Alice Pritchard Milner of Midland went to be with Jesus on Wednesday, February 3rd, surrounded by her family. A burial service at Rest Haven Cemetery will take place on the morning of Monday, February 8th, for members of the immediate family. A celebration of Nancy's life will follow at 2 p.m. that afternoon in the sanctuary of First Baptist Church. Noberta Gonzalez, 76, of Midland, passed away on Monday, February 1st. Viewing will be at Luella Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday from 10 to 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited on Monday evening at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. A funeral mass is set for Tuesday, February 9th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Bonnie Lintner, 84, of Midland, passed away on February 2nd. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Thursday, February 11th, at Nellie Picklin Welsh Funeral Home and Chapel. Funeral Mass will be at 2 p.m. Friday, February 12th, at St. Stephen's Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, February 6th, 2021. Section A. Landgraf tapped as chairman. Odessa representative assigned to committees important for West Texas by Federico Martinez. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican Odessa, has been selected to chair the Texas House Committee on Environmental Regulation, which has jurisdiction over environmental matters that are regulated by the state. Speaker Dade Phelan, Republican Beaumont, announced the chairmanship Thursday and also noted that Landgraf was also named to the House's pivotal redistricting committee and reappointed to serve on the Transportation Committee. This chairmanship and these committee assignments put me in an optimal position to serve my fellow West Texans and our interests here in the Permian Basin, Landgraf said in a prepared statement. I'm grateful to Speaker Phelan for his confidence in me and welcome the additional responsibility. I am ready to get to work for the people of Texas. Landgraf said the Environmental Regulation Committee is responsible for promoting the oil and gas industry and maintaining a safe environment. As chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee, I will work to ensure unnecessary and burdensome regulations do not prevent hardworking Texans from being able to make a living for their families in the energy sector, Landgraf said when reached Friday. Every Texan wants to breathe fresh air and drink clean water. Environmental alarmists have monopolized the conversation and confused the issues. A prolific oil and gas industry does not have to be at odds with the desire to maintain a healthy environment. We can achieve both goals simultaneously and have done so in Texas for decades. The Environmental Regulation Committee has jurisdiction over matters pertaining to air, land and water pollution, industrial development, and environmental matters that are regulated by the Department of State Health Services, DSHS, or the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ. In his prepared statement, Landgraf said, I look forward to working alongside the Speaker and leading the Environmental Regulation Committee, which is a critically important committee for the energy sector and the Permian Basin. Regardless of title or assignment, my goals remain the same. Be a strong voice for West Texas, keep our state conservative, and make Texas the best place in America to live, work, and raise a family. The 87th Texas legislative session began in January and is underway through May 31st, 2021. In accordance with the Texas Constitution, the state legislature meets for a 140-day regular session every odd-numbered year to vote on legislation and pass a balanced state budget. Musician finds calling in teaching. Oboist has been with MOSC for 25 years, by Michael Bauer. Midland. Karen Crutchfield can't pinpoint the exact moment she decided she wanted to be a music teacher. She just always knew she wanted to pursue a career in music in some form. I think that's always interesting because you end up being in music because that was something that you did well in high school, Crutchfield said. That's what it comes down to. I love music. I didn't really know what I wanted to do in music. I just knew that I really liked it. Her passion for music has carried her throughout high school and college and continues to this day. Crutchfield currently teaches band at Bowie Fine Arts Academy in Midland. She also plays the oboe in the Midland Odessa Symphony Chorale and gives private lessons as well. Doing all of that while balancing a family life can be very challenging, but the Midland resident and mother of three makes it all work by sticking to a concrete schedule. You have to make a schedule and follow it, Crutchfield said. I've learned to say no sometimes too, because sometimes I can't get to do some things because I'll have a performance coming, and sometimes I can fit things into my schedule and other times I can't. Of course, my family is my number one priority. I'm constantly keeping things in balance and knowing that sometimes it's okay to say no at times. In grade school, Crutchfield started off playing the flute before switching to oboe. She's played the flute other times since, but she's mostly stayed with the oboe. She attended high school in the Golden State, graduating from Chico High School in Chico, California. She made her way to the Lone Star State by attending West Texas A&M University in Canyon, where she received her bachelor's and master's degrees. After finishing college, Crutchfield made her way to the Permian Basin and auditioned for the Midland Odessa Symphony Chorale on the recommendation of the late and former longtime Midland Lee band director, Randy Story. I'm so glad that when I was graduating from college that Randy Story called and said, here's what you're going to do. You're going to audition for the symphony and teach part-time at Goddard, and you can give private lessons to help make up the rest of your salary, and we want you to move to Midland, Crutchfield said. From there, she started to realize that teaching was her calling. I really did not know what I was going to do, Crutchfield said. I didn't have a plan. I had a master's degree, but no plan. Although I didn't want to teach, I realized that teaching was for me and that it's something that I've enjoyed over the years. I'm glad that all of those things brought me to Midland and that every step I've taken has solidified my feelings. I've enjoyed living here. I love this area and I've raised my kids here. Living in this area has had way more of an impact than I thought it would. It's pretty cool that God put me here. While she didn't initially plan to be in education, Crutchfield said she discovered over time how to teach thanks to some mentors and her family. I think teaching is just in my family, Crutchfield said. My mom was a teacher. I think I came by it naturally. But I also had really good teachers that I looked up to and gave me a chance in music. I really enjoy watching kids learn. I enjoy knowing that I can give them a good start on their instruments. So as far as the teaching aspect, that's what I enjoy the most. Crutchfield has now been performing in the Midland Odessa Symphony Chorale for 25 years. Her talents were showcased in a performance January 30th, where she was the featured musician performing David Millikan's Oboe Concerto. And with so many other things these past 12 months, the pandemic has found a way to interfere with Crutchfield's work. While she still offers private lessons in person, Crutchfield has had to find a way to adjust to giving oboe lessons in a virtual setting. It's hard because you can't see or hear things that you do in person, Crutchfield said. You really have to have them position their cameras so you can see more of their hand positions and mouths. The students who are virtual, it's harder to hear the quality, but the oboe is one of the hardest instruments to play really well. So just all the little nuances that you would normally hear are just harder to understand. She says sometimes the Zoom calls will cut out during virtual lessons, which makes it harder to tell if her students are having trouble or not with their instruments. It requires a lot more communication between yourself and your student, because when they're here, you can see and hear what they're doing, Crutchfield said. As far as performing in the orchestra, Crutchfield always enjoys being surrounded by the music and hearing all the different sections. It's also where she met her husband, Kevin, who plays the violin. It's something that we get to do together, but it's really satisfying and accomplishing to get a piece of music and put it together, whether it's by yourself or in the orchestra, and just seeing the final product, Crutchfield said. It's very rewarding. As she reflects on her career up to this point, she said she owes her success to her determination. I think just a never give up kind of spirit. Just continue to be determined, Crutchfield said. I did have this chat with my teacher. He said, little did I know just how determined you were when I got you as a beginning student. But I was determined to be successful, and I was determined about what I needed to do to be successful. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering the first dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine next week at the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. The clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates close at 2 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday, and tentative open on Friday, only if vaccines remain. These dates and times are subject to change or cancellation due to the extremely cold temperatures. Dates for the second doses of the vaccine will be announced soon, which will not be administered at Ratliff. The clinic for the first dose is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B, most at risk and ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for quicker on-site processing. For those who are not able to register online, they will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short sleeve clothing, easy to access arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessatx.gov. Odessa Regional Medical Center is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. The vaccine is free of charge while supplies last. Please check on vaccine availability. For more information, call 432-582-8549 or visit tinyurl.com/Y3JQHZ89. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available in select areas. For eligibility requirements or more information, visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. HEB pharmacies are prepared to receive new allotments of COVID-19 vaccine at any time from the state of Texas. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. To sign up, updates, or information, visit vaccine.heb.com. The CVS stores are administering COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only in select stores based on local eligibility guidelines. For updates or information, visit tinyurl.com/Y508QJE4. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering the COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines in select areas. For updates, visit tinyurl.com/Y5K95KZN. It's Girl Scout cookie season. Girl Scout entrepreneurs in Odessa and Midland are selling cookies, such as the new gluten-free toffee tassic, in safe, creative, and socially distant ways, including through the organization's first-ever national delivery services collaboration with Grubhub. The Girl Scout Cookie Program has long taught girls how to run a business via in-person booths, door-to-door activity, and the digital cookie platform online, which GSUSA launched in 2014. When the pandemic hit in the middle of the 2020 cookie season, girls were faced with the same challenges as other small businesses. Girl Scouts in Las Cruces quickly pivoted their sales methods from running virtual cookie booths on social media to setting up drive-through locations to facilitating orders that ship directly to customers' doors. Girls as young as 5 years old are continuing to embrace their entrepreneurial spirits, stay connected to their communities, and have fun by participating in the cookie program. The proceeds from each and every purchase stay local with the troop and its council to power Girl Scouts' essential leadership programming. This season, Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest is participating in a national collaboration with food ordering and delivery platform Grubhub. In Las Cruces, consumers can order Girl Scout cookies for pickup or deliver on Grubhub.com or Grubhub app. A hands-on experience in managing e-commerce, local Girl Scouts will track and fulfill orders, manage inventory, and more, all using Grubhub's back-end technology. This method is now available from 4 to 8 p.m. Fridays in Odessa and Midland, and from 1 to 8 p.m. Saturdays and Sundays. As always, the proceeds benefit the troop and council while providing another innovative way to safely run the cookie program virtually. GSUSA is grateful to Grubhub for waiving all fees for the organization to make this new delivery option feasible for sales without reducing troops and council's proceeds. GSUSA is making it possible for all consumers nationwide who don't already know a Girl Scout to purchase Girl Scout cookies online for shipment to their door. Customers can enter their zip code into the Girl Scout Cookie Finder to find a local troop to purchase from through the digital cookie platform for direct shipment or donation to local organizations. This additional contact-free method supports local girls while keeping their safety and skill building top of mind. For more information, email info@gsdsw.org or visit www.gsdsw.org. Girls in grades K through 12 may join for free for a limited time. Visit mygs.girlscouts.org or call 915-566-9433. Pfluger leads Texas Ag Task Force. Washington. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas District 11, was announced as a leader of the Texas Ag Task Force in Congress by the Lone Star State's Republican delegation Friday. Congressman Pfluger issued a statement following the announcement of the task force. The 11th District of Texas is one of the top agriculture-producing regions in the country, with over 15 million acres of farm and ranch land worked by diligent producers who provide not only this district but the entire nation with the food and fiber we need to survive, Pfluger stated. I am excited to lead this task force with several of my colleagues and ensure that Texans present a strong, united voice as we advocate for the hundreds of thousands of hardworking farmers and ranchers in the Lone Star State. House Agriculture Committee Republican leader G.T. Thompson reportedly welcomed the United Texas effort in agriculture, stating, "Texas is the epicenter of production agriculture and is essential to our nation's food security. The Texas Ag Task Force will be an important part of staying close to Texas producers as we craft the next farm bill and advance policies that strengthen American agriculture and rural America." Local News Roundup. Monster Truck Show. O'Reilly Auto Parts Outlaw Nationals has been scheduled for 7:30 p.m. February 19th and 20th and 2 p.m. February 20th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Doors open at 5:30 p.m. Kids can sign up for a chance to take part in the Kids Monster Truck Challenge. Tickets are limited. For tickets, visit boxofficesolutions.net/index.html. Fundraiser Dinner. The Life Center has scheduled a fundraiser dinner featuring speaker Benjamin Watson, former NFL player, author, speaker, and philanthropist, at 6:30 p.m. April 27th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center, 305 East 5th. To sponsor a table, visit www.tlcdonor.org/Odessa. Award. The Garriga Law Firm is honored to be this year's recipient of the Club Champion of Philanthropy Award, presented by the Boys and Girls Club of Odessa. Jose Luis and Melinda Garriga have spent the last decade providing financial and moral support to this incredible organization that helps local kids reach their potential through several enrichment programs. Mr. and Mrs. Garriga have been very hands-on with supporting the youth of the Permian Basin, whether it be helping with an event, financial support, and most importantly, moral support. The Garriga Law Firm are believers of the great mission of the Boys and Girls Club, Nidia Ortiz with the Boys and Girls Club Odessa said. Their support allows us to keep our doors open during these unforeseen times and continue to provide all of our services to our kids. Because of their generosity, we are able to provide scholarships to our kids who would otherwise be unable to pay member fees. Jose Luis Garriga has been practicing personal injury and wrongful death law for over 30 years in Texas and New Mexico. For more information about the Garriga Law Firm, visit www.garrigalawfirm.com. City offers lawn mowing and roof repair assistance. The City of Odessa Community Development Department is offering lawn mowing and roof repairing assistance for residents who meet income and age guidelines. To qualify for lawn mowing assistance, a person must reside within Odessa city limits. Everyone in household must be at least 65 years old or disabled and be the homeowner, according to a city press release. Residents must also have a total household income that does not exceed HUD low income limits. HUD low income limits range from $39,400 for a household of one to a combined total income of $74,250 for a household of eight. To qualify for the city's roof repair program, an applicant must reside within the City of Odessa, own the home in which they reside, and must be clear of any liens. Property taxes must have a balance of $150 or less. To qualify, a total household income cannot exceed HUD low income limits. For more information, contact the City's Community Development Department at 432-335-4820. Local News Roundup. Affidavit says man claims he was attacked during fatal shooting. An Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit detailed the 36-year-old claimed he fatally shot a 33-year-old man because he was attacked. Raymond Philip Mosley, 36, was charged with murder, a first-degree felony. Mosley was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 7:38 a.m. Wednesday, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $150,000 and was still in custody as of Friday morning. Officers were dispatched to Medical Center Hospital at 2:25 a.m. Wednesday in reference to a gunshot victim, the affidavit stated. MCH police detailed the victim, identified as 33-year-old Justin Payne, was pronounced dead by medical staff, and Mosley was still on scene. Officers reportedly made contact with Mosley, who had blood on his hands and on his clothing. Mosley stated he shot Payne because the victim attacked him. There were reportedly no significant injuries on Mosley. Payne was in the front passenger seat of a gray 2009 Ford Flex, the affidavit stated. He had multiple gunshot wounds. Officers also saw a firearm in plain view located in the center console. Video surveillance was reportedly reviewed, and it confirmed Mosley was operating the Ford Flex. Crane man dies in single vehicle collision. A 30-year-old Crane man died after he was reportedly involved in a single vehicle collision. The reported fatal collision happened at 12:04 a.m. Friday in the 5800 block of South Highway 385, an Odessa Police Department press release detailed. Investigation reportedly showed that Dana Harvey was traveling in a 2014 GMC Yukon. Harvey was driving northbound in the 5800 block of South Highway 385 and left the roadway before colliding with a light pole. He was transported to a local hospital and later pronounced dead by medical personnel, the press release stated. Next of kin have been notified, and the investigation continues. Man charged with threatening to shoot UTPB police. A 33-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly threatened to shoot any UTPB police officer that he encountered. Mitchell James Cock was charged with terroristic threat, a third-degree felony. On January 30th, UTPB police officer Luke Raymond was told that Cock was threatening to come to the UTPB campus, 4903 East University, for the purpose of shooting any police officer that he encountered, an Ector County Sheriff's Office probable cause affidavit detailed. Detective Wes Carta reportedly conducted an audio-recorded interview on February 1st with 38-year-old Matt Spratlin in reference to the threats. Spratlin stated on January 30th, between the hours of 8 p.m. and midnight, that he was talking to Cock, a person known to him for 8 to 9 years. During this conversation, Spratlin stated that Cock made several threats to shoot police officers on the UTPB campus, the affidavit stated. Spratlin stated that Cock was going to drive around the campus at 90 miles per hour for the sole purpose of shooting the first officer who stopped him. Cock further stated, however many I can take out with me is the ones I'm going to take out. Spratlin reportedly continued to detail that he mentioned that there are other people on the campus walking their dogs, families with kids, and Cock replied something similar to, well, I guess if someone catches a stray bullet, then it's just their time to go. Cock also reportedly made the comment about a mutual friend, UTPB officer Raymond. Luke took an oath. If Luke gets in the way, he'll get Luke or Luke will get him. Spratlin stated that Cox's anger toward UTPB police began after he was arrested in October of 2020 by a UTPB officer for unlawfully carrying a weapon, a Class A misdemeanor. But records show that Cock was arrested for the misdemeanor on October 12th. He had one bond totaling $2,500 and posted bail the same day. On February 1st, an audio recorded interview was conducted with Jay Durie in reference to the threats made by Cock, the affidavit stated. Durie stated he didn't hear the entire conversation that took place with Spratlin and Cock. He stated that when he walked up to the two, he heard Koch make the statement that he was going to drive around UTPB at 90 miles per hour and shoot the first cop who stopped him. Dury also stated that Koch made other statements about shooting people during the conversation, but all of these threats weren't about anyone specific. Spratlin and Dury reportedly detailed that Koch had a handgun with him on January 30th, and he always carries a gun with him. Koch was booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center at 9:46 p.m. Thursday, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $20,000 and was still in custody as of Friday afternoon. Obituaries for Saturday, February 6th. Steve Lemuel Holifield, Sr. Laurel, Mississippi. Steve Lemuel Holifield, Sr. passed away Sunday, January 31st in Laurel, Mississippi. He was born December 4th, 1937 in Laurel, Mississippi to Lemuel Malden Holifield and Pearl Rustin Holifield. Steve and his wife, Sandra, were married for 45 years until her death in 2003. They lived in Crane for 36 years before relocating to Midland. He married Brenda Zug in 2018. Steve is preceded in death by his wife, Sandra Nell Orr Holifield, sons Steve Lemuel Holifield Jr. and James Jeffrey Holifield, his parents Pearl Rustin Holifield and Lemuel Malden Holifield, and a sister Frances Busby. He is survived by his wife Brenda Zug Holifield of Laurel, Mississippi, 5 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren, a daughter-in-law Lisa Holifield of Midland, brother Ridgely Malden Holifield and wife Barbara of Ira Ann, sisters-in-law Amy Buchanan of Midland and Jackie Newcomb of Georgetown, a brother-in-law John Orr and wife Mary of El Campo, stepson Stephen Zug and wife Nancy of Laurel, Mississippi, stepdaughter Rochelle Manning and husband Billy of Laurel, Mississippi, and numerous nieces, nephews, and cousins. A funeral service was held Friday at 11 a.m. at Stonegate Fellowship Church. Interment followed at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements were under the direction of Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Mary Lou Shaw. Mary Lou Shaw, 94, of Odessa, passed away Friday, January 29th at the Courtyards Assisted Living and Memory Care Residential Facility in Odessa. She was born in Brownsville, Tennessee, May 28th, 1926, to Earl and Sarah Hamlet. Mary Lou was preceded in death by an infant son, her parents, her husband of 57 years, her son Earl Shaw, her sister and brother-in-law Joanne and Joe Lowry, her husband's sister and brother-in-law Martha and Eddie Cornelius, and her husband's brother and sister-in-law John and Betsy Shaw. She is survived by her daughter Ruth Ann McQuitty of Odessa, son Billy Shaw and husband Jimmy Hill of Garner, North Carolina, and daughter-in-law Brenda Shaw of Odessa, 3 grandsons, 4 great-grandchildren, and several nieces and nephews. Visitation will be Sunday, February 7th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home Chapel. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, February 8th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. A memorial service will follow the graveside service at 11 a.m. Monday, February 8th at First United Methodist Church with Pastors Jay Armstrong, Karen Carlson, and Jody Wallen officiating. Masks should be worn and social distancing maintained at the visitation and memorial service. Memorials may be given to the First United Methodist Church or a charity of choice. Death Notice. Nancy Jean Goddard. Nancy Jean Goddard, 73, of Odessa, died Wednesday, February 3rd. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.